It's Saturday, April 14th, 2012. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KSP Public Radio in the first half of Geek Speak. We'll cover the geek news in the second half. We get to take your phone calls. That's right, Rick is back. So think about what you might want to ask us, and I'll be giving out the phone numbers a bit. I'll be inviting your participation in about 23 minutes, and you can ask us anything you'd like here on Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's theme is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. We welcome you to create music for Geek Speak. We'll play it. Geek Speak is a creative endeavor, Creative Commons, share and share alike. If you would like to ask us questions today, you're welcome to do so in about 22 minutes now. We'll be taking any calls about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And it's been a while since we've taken calls, so I look forward to hearing from you in the second half of our program. But in the first half of the program, I'm going to welcome, for both halves, Ben Jaffe, a freelance instructor and media guy. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. And Mr. Miles Elam, software engineer, political junkie.
Good morning.
You guys are sporting the same do, which is very appropriate
for
radio.
Both neatly shorn.
Yes. Both your heads and your cheeks.
And newly shorn.
But not your frontal armatures.
Cortexes? Yeah. Where are you going there?
Let's go ahead and start the geek news with Mr. Miles Elam. Hi.
Oh, okay, start with me, huh?
I am.
Well, a physicist has shown how yet again physics and math are applicable to all areas of life.
To everything.
To everything.
Of course.
In this case, a physicist challenged a traffic ticket.
Ooh, okay.
He published a paper, did the math, and proved that it would not have been possible for him to have been guilty of the ticket for failing to halt at a stop sign.
Why? How did he do that?
The argument, which is a 4-page paper that he published, delved in the differences between angular and linear motion.
Interesting. Oh.
Got him out of a $400 ticket.
So he came to a California stop. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah.
You don't know the details of it. Darn it. I want to know, does this work for anybody?
Well, he did write a paper on it, so you can read
it.
And we will be linking to that paper after the show.
Okay, up at geekspeak.org, you can read the whole paper on how to maybe get out of a traffic ticket.
Well, now you have notes. You can look at the paper, and,
hopefully
you'll have someone who have a judge who is amenable to your arguments.
And right, and doesn't go, no.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. What's up in space?
Well, I want to talk about two spaceship attractions. And we don't get news like this very often. So first of all, this space shuttle Discovery is no longer flying, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. However, it will make one final flight on top of that gigantic plane, the 747 shuttle carrier aircraft, as they fly it to the Smithsonian. So I can't do this, but if you're in Washington, D.C., go outside on April 17th between 10 and 11 a.m. They're going to make a couple passes over D.C. with the shuttle on the 747 shuttle carrier aircraft. So you're actually going to be able to, if you're in D.C. and you're in the right place, you might actually be able to see the shuttle flying before
it gets... On top of another plane.
On top of another plane.
Yeah, so, see, I was expecting from the news story that it was going to be the shuttle was, doing that landing.
Yeah.
I mean, falling like a brick with hummingbird wings.
Hey, it's graceful. It's beautiful.
Graceful in that, falling like a stone graceful. Yeah.
Well, a stone that levels out and lands smoothly at the very, very end.
A stone that pulls up, and it's pulling up is equivalent
it's more
to
like a scrape down.
Yeah, it lands at 30 degrees or something. I don't know what the actual angle is, but anyway, so that's one of our space attractions, right?
Okay, are they retiring the plane that actually carries the shuttle? I mean, if that's the name of your, I'm a shuttle carrier.
I don't know. I imagine they probably have to carry the other shuttles as well to their various destinations.
If
so I'm not sure when that's going to happen. But here's the other one. Here's the one I'm really excited about. Unfortunately, it'll never come to fruition. So in 1992, they created these plans to build in Las Vegas a Star Trek attraction. Now, you guys, I'm sure, and maybe some of our listeners know, there have been two Star Trek attractions in Vegas.
I didn't know that, and I'm actually kind of proud of that fact.
I'm proud of you too, Miles. I know that and have been to it many times. It's the only reason to go to Vegas.
The first one was amazing. The second one, of course, they had to involve the Borg because... And it was really, really, it was really bad. It was really
and
bad.
For the record, just I want to put this out there on the official record. The Borg Queen was the worst idea ever.
No. The final episode of Voyager.
No, you can't do spoilers.
I'm not going to do spoilers. I'm just saying that was
going into
the worst idea ever.
Star Trek trivia.
Anyway, okay. By the way, the last episode of Voyager aired a really long time ago. So at some point, we're going to have to, you know, forget the spoilers idea. But anyway, okay, here's the attraction. In 1992, they were going to build in Las Vegas, not some silly little thing that they ended up building. They were going to build a life-size Star Trek Enterprise. Like, fully size.
Like a hotel?
No, not a hotel. Like the Enterprise, one-to-one scale.
I know, but if they
model.
Did that, would you go inside it?
Like, you'd go inside of it. You'd have a Star Trek experience.
Why wouldn't
inside.
They have it a hotel?
You
I
can
mean,
see
it's
the
big enough.
Bridge. I'm not really sure what the accompanying plans were.
Do you
because,
recall this? Yeah,
because they were trying to get this passed. Let me just read from this article. The guy who wrote this article is talking about the meeting that they had with the decision maker at Paramount, the CEO of Paramount at the time. So he says, quote...
Am I going to hate this guy in a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, go
yeah.
ahead.
To be clear, everyone, all caps, loved the project up to this point. The entire Las Vegas Downtown Redevelopment Committee loved the concept. The mayor loved it. Paramount Studios Vice President of Licensing and the entire licensing department loved it, as did Cherry Lansing. Everybody loved it, but now it was up to one man. And that one man was the CEO of Paramount at the time. They had this meeting, and he axed it.
Why?
Why? He said, and this is paraphrased because I don't think they actually recorded the meeting. Basically, he said, you know, this is a major project. If you want to put a full-scale model Enterprise in the heart of Las Vegas, that's a big project. If you make a really, really high-budget movie and it flops, people will talk about it for a couple months. They'll forget about it. If you build a life-size Star Trek Enterprise and it flops, no one's going to forget about
it'll
it.
It'll ruin the property.
And it'll be sitting there. Embarrassment to Paramount for forever, you know?
Yeah, I hate this guy.
Yeah.
But wait a second.
You know why I hate him more?
Yeah.
I just have to tell you one thing. His name was Stanley Jaffe.
Oh, he ruined your name, Ben.
He ruined my name.
I'm surprised you're not pronouncing your name differently now.
Yeah, I'm
Thank
Benjamin.
Thank you, Ben Jaffe.
I'm Benjamin Jaffe. So,
Ben, the Star Trek Enterprise full scale, was it the original Next Generation?
It was the NCC 1701 or NCC 1701A. That actually, the article.
My question was that the first one or the Next Generation?
Oh, sorry,
I don't know.
The original Star
Trek.
The original.
So it's a much smaller ship.
It's not small.
No, I wouldn't say it's small, but it's smaller than Next Generation.
It is smaller by not a huge amount.
Oh,
it should be a lot smaller.
I think it's a big amount. I think it's or anything, but it got bigger.
I think it's like 20 or 25% smaller.
Do you recall that when you first mentioned Minecraft on Geekspeak a year ago or so, you talked about the guy that did a Star Trek Enterprise 1-to-1 in Minecraft.
It was almost 1-to-1.
Almost 1-to-1. He had some problems with meter conversions and deck heights and stuff. But after that was created, I went in Minecraft and walked through that ship. And the thing that you note very quickly is that the Next Generation Enterprise ship is huge.
It's really,
like, it's
really
ridiculously big.
Okay, so correction. Miles, you win. It's about half the length. It's not nearly as wide.
Right.
Like the Enterprise
but
D.
How are they going to build
huge.
This thing? It was going to be like on stands? Because it doesn't have a sit on the earth kind of quality.
No, it doesn't. In fact, it was built in space dock for that reason because... You can't.
Nerd.
also, it didn't have the capability to land, although subsequent versions of the ship did, and the Voyager ship did. But yeah. So, in looking at this and trying to figure out how this structurally was going to work, if you've seen the Enterprise model, there's a humongous saucer section which wouldn't be touching the ground. And so that saucer section actually would have to be braced because physics just won't allow it not to be braced. We don't have...
But physics does allow you to stop at a stop sign.
That's true, I suppose. Kind of.
Well, thank you for the... allows you to not stop at a stop sign.
Right. Yeah.
Is that really what the story is? That guy actually like didn't really stop?
I don't know.
Thank you, Ben, for this wonderful story about something that didn't happen in Vegas.
I am so sad.
If it doesn't happen in Vegas, it stays in Vegas.
I now cry myself to sleep every night because I think about... I mean, imagine you could go to Vegas for like $100, fly to Vegas, and see the Enterprise. Why don't we have that? That is wrong. I'm sorry. I need to get off my soapbox.
Because we'd have a Starship Enterprise.
I'm so passionate about this.
I was actually thinking, wow, seriously? First world problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I want my Star Trek Enterprise now.
I may or may not go to see it, but hey.
I would go to see it. I'm going to waste lots of fuel going to see it. Exactly.
How depressing. Miles, bring us up to something else, would you please?
Yes.
Anything. Anything else.
Yes, I'll move us in a very different direction. Well, sort of. I mean, Star Trek 4 did have whales.
Are you going to talk about whales or are you going to talk about Star Trek 4? Are you talking about time travel?
So, I had a friend of mine, a biologist, send me this link, which I found interesting. This comes from The Atlantic.
The ocean or the paper?
The article.
Okay, great.
The headline. And this is, and hey, get ready for this one, because I very rarely give a headline like this on GeekSpeak.
Okay.
Whale barf is no longer needed to make high-end perfume.
Wait, back up.
Awesome.
It was needed in the first place?
These things that whales, like, I guess, vomit up that are like these balls of pure goodness that they use for perfume. What are those things called?
Ambergris.
Ambergris.
What?
It's not April 1st either, Ben. I'm being totally serious.
Made from aged and weathered whale vomit. Now, I do have to wonder.
Like a wine.
Right. Yeah, it does make me wonder where this originally came up. Like, did whalers in the 19th century go out and do this?
I got something to sell you, baby.
No. I was thinking along the lines of, was it that the whaler went out and, you know, got stuff all over them and, you know, and then they go home to their wives and their wives were like, hey. Or...
So these are things.
Or was it that the whalers themselves went, hey, this felt kind of good, and then they foisted it on the public?
Does this stuff need to be processed a lot? So, Ben, if you're walking along an ocean seashore, right, and you find like an egg-type thing that's about the size of a human head, I think that's the size of these things, and it's like, what is that thing? It might be some of the stuff, and it's worth thousands of dollars per ounce.
Oh my God,
$20 a gram.
$20 a gram.
No, really?
It's expensive stuff. Is it called ambrosh?
Ambergris.
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 What is it? What is it like? Is it like a hard shell of a thing, or is it like goopy, or like? Maybe we shouldn't even go ambergris.
Ambergris is the Latin. Is a solid, waxy, flammable substance of a dull gray or blackish color, produced in the digestive system of and regurgitated by sperm whales. So it comes from sperm whales. And it kind of looks like they've got a picture of it on Wikipedia. So we'll link to this on geekspeak.org if you want to find out more about this.
But researchers at the University of British Columbia have discovered a plant-based replacement. Don't need to go combing the
oceans
for...
They can artificially produce it.
Whale barf.
So freshly produced, ambergris has a marine... Okay, it has a nasty odor. I'm not going to read that on air. However, as it ages, it acquires a sweet, earthy scent commonly likened to the fragrance of rubbing alcohol without the vaporous chemical astringency. The principal historical use of ambergris was as a fixative in perfumery. Okay, so it's used as the stuff that actually attaches the perfumes to you, though it has been largely displaced by synthetics. So now we have a better synthetic.
Or not necessarily a synthetic. It is a plant-based, so it's not synthetic. It's just from a different source.
Yeah.
It's no longer animal based. Yeah.
That is really, really interesting.
Why do you have a scrunched up, disgusted face look?
I do. Well, I remember actually the moment when I learned that we used seaweed in all kinds of food. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I was probably in fourth or fifth grade, and I was just like, oh, God, that's disgusting. It's seaweed, you know? Because you go to the beach and there's the slimy seaweed.
When did you find out about hot dogs? Oh, wait, you're vegetarian. You must have found out at some point.
Yes, I did.
Let's go on to asteroids and life, shall we?
Okay, first, we have a correction from Don Cochran. He emailed us in, he emailed into us and said that it's 40 degrees, the angle of entry of the shuttle.
Oh, good.
So
thanks, Don.
I wouldn't have ventured to guess that sharp of an angle, but yeah, I guess it is kind of like a rock when it lands.
So to be clear, you know, 45 degrees, we should all pretty 40. Much know what that is. I know. 45 degrees, we should pretty much know what it is. It's, you know, halfway to 90.
Yeah, it's exactly diagonal.
So 40 degrees is really close to that.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Except you're pointing down. Oh, wait, no,
you're pointing
up. You're pointing up.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Sorry.
You don't want to land pointing down.
Yeah, that would be a very
high if you're sitting backwards, I guess, in the space shuttle. You might be pointing down.
Just a, oh, gosh. But,
so is that a...
Tear up the runway.
It's a backslash, I think, is the...
Well, is the plane moving left or right?
It always goes to the right. It's English. Come on.
If it goes to the right, it's a forward slash. Look at your keyboard, man.
If it goes up, it's a forward slash. If it goes down...
If it heads to the right, it's a forward slash.
Correct.
What do you mean if it heads to the right?
The space shuttle is landing to the left.
I cannot believe we're talking about this.
The worst show ever.
Right.
Let's go. On, please save
and us and back. Mike's statement of 40 degrees down would be correct if you consider that there is no technically no up and down
until it touches the earth.
So for any hardcore nerds out there,
there's no one listening anymore. Ben, what are you talking about?
my housemate asked me, Ben, what is up? And I started thinking about that. It's a really difficult question to answer because first you have to figure out. Up relative to what? The center of the Earth? Is that the gravitational center? Is that okay? Moving on.
Yeah, I have a solution to all of this.
Yeah,
read Ender's Game.
Yes,
first
Ender's Game,
like chapter. You're done.
And Ender's Game is a great game. I've got to get Wyatt reading that. 10-year-old reading that. That should be perfect, right? Ben.
Okay.
Please.
So, at the Kyoto Sangyo University in Japan, they were calculating. When the asteroid smashed into Earth about 65 million years ago, it was a 10-kilometer asteroid. Big, big, big asteroid, massive, at least over a trillion tons. So we know what happened on Earth, like huge tsunamis. We had wildfires. Basically, the Earth kind of did a little reboot, right? But up until now, I suppose, we haven't really, at least I haven't read about any calculations about what happened to the stuff ejected from the Earth. So when something smashes into the Earth, other stuff goes splashing out, just kind of like if you drop a stone into a bowl of water, right? You get that ejecta. And so they were talking about, where they were calculating where did all of that ejecta go? Now, we would imagine a lot of it would go out to the moon, hit the moon, right? However, the results were fairly surprising to me. They calculated that almost as much ejecta would have ended up on Europa, that's a Jupiter moon, than our moon.
That makes sense to me.
Why?
Because the moon is a small target, and it's it's only one small angle of the sky away from the Earth, whereas Jupiter is a great vacuum cleaner for the solar system.
Because of its gravitational pull, yeah.
Yes, and it would, and even if it didn't catch it on one pass, it still has you know, a couple of passes to get it. And then it would be launching that material at its satellites, Europa being one of the
satellites
larger ones.
Or that material as it is.
Exactly. So the Jovian...
Oh, hey, me talking off the cuff is...
You win,
just
Miles.
Just as good as reading actual news.
Maybe we should shouldn't read stories anymore. But yeah, so the Jovian moons got actually a lot of our debris. Jovian is a word for Jupiter, you know, around Jupiter, right? However, they also did some calculations about how much of this mass probably made its way into interstellar space outside of our solar system. And it turns out a lot of it. So they were saying that probably a good amount made its way to Gliese 581. That's a red dwarf. It's about 20 light years from here. 20 light years is a really, 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 really long way And so if you send a rock on its way at about the speed they were calculating, it would take 1 million years to reach this star.
How long did this happen?
65 million years.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
now, so that's a long time for life to sit on a rock and then yeah, be viable.
Exactly. So that's actually, they go on to talk about that. Like, can microbes survive right on an asteroid for 65 million years or even 1 million years?
And then what about reentry when it gets to that solar system?
Yeah, but I mean, if a lot of rocks made it, then maybe one of the rocks...
If you can make it in a rock for 1 million years...
You can make it in 64 million?
No, I was actually thinking along the lines of reentry. If the rock made it all the way, I don't know how bad that would be considering all the cosmic radiation
out there.
That would stink,
wouldn't it? You go for 1 million years and then get burned up in the last minute.
We almost got there.
Worst vacation ever.
Yeah. So a couple more calculations. They said that it would take 10 to the 12 years. It's a lot of years for ejecta from the Earth to spread through a volume of space about the size of the Milky Way galaxy. Of course, our galaxy, the Milky Way, is only 10 to the 10 years old. So that means that it couldn't make it all the way. But they also calculated that if this happened at 25 different sites in the galaxy, there is a good possibility that all of the ejecta from all of those combined sites could actually fill the Milky Way. Which means, here's the punchline, is we might actually have asteroids coming into our solar system that are from other places that had life. If this were true.
Comets? Asteroids.
I think asteroid
is specifically something that's asteroid belt.
Asteroid, meteor, meteorite.
So what's the difference between comet and asteroid?
Comets are a icier, watery, loose clump of material. Asteroids are usually characterized as being a solid body and similar to what a planet would be, except that it's not large enough to have formed a spherical form, spherical shape.
So... I just found asteroids and comets are both classified as near-Earth objects. Asteroids are rock and or metal. And comets are ice, rock, and organic carbon-based compounds.
Near-Earth?
Typically near-Earth. But I don't know. I mean,
Wait, what? Near-Earth? No.
You just said near-Earth.
They're both classified as near-Earth objects. But I mean, I've...
No, that's saying that what are near-Earth objects? They're going to be asteroids or comets. But comets... And asteroids, while they can also be near-Earth objects, they can also be far from Earth objects.
But don't they have a different name? Meteorites?
No.
Meteorites are when they come into the atmosphere.
Meteorite is when it hits the ground. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Asteroids are when they're off in space, and it has nothing to do with their proximity to the Earth.
All right. So there we go.
We don't sound like we know what we're doing today.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Well, some people.
Well, no. We're in agreement. See, yes. that rarely happens.
I think
we don't know what we're talking about.
Mild one more news story before the break.
So I will give just a quick little tidbit, and that is, remember that Netflix $1 million prize for making an algorithm that's 10% better than their prediction algorithm?
Yeah.
This was 5 years ago, maybe even longer. Oh, my goodness. It was a long time ago. Well, someone actually did best their score by 10%, and it was published, and Netflix has never used it and has no immediate plans to use it.
Wait, why?
Because the technical infrastructure change that it would require to replace the algorithm and the fact that they are not predominantly DVD-based anymore. They are now closer to the streaming model is now going to the fore. The algorithm isn't as important. And also, the engineering cost of moving that in there is greater than the cost of buying more servers.
Interesting.
But isn't changing an algorithm a one-time cost, whereas buying more servers and maintaining those servers is a long-term
cost? But I mean, the gain that they get in terms of people's... how much they gain the return on investment.
Right. Like, yeah. What you're
people's
saying is
happiness
Netflix
that they
actually,
get back from their from that, and yeah. then the customer satisfaction.
But what you're saying is Netflix has a better solution for servicing examples of films you'd like, and yet they're not using it because I don't think it's important enough. See, I've been noticing that Netflix is just decreasing in its quality. I'm liking it less and less as a service.
Well, they're changing. It used to be just DVDs, so you chose which DVDs you wanted. Now you have a lot more prompting in terms of this is now available for streaming, and so
I don't know. I don't do the DVDs anymore, right? So I'm only doing the streaming, and I just seem to continually not find the stuff I want to find.
I don't do the DVDs either, but I pay for it.
Why do you pay for it?
Because it just you forget, and it's just there.
You're still paying for it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Dude.
So I've had the same three discs for like 6 months.
That's why I stopped doing it, because it took me about 8 months to not watch them.
That's like people who have broadband or DSL or cable, and they're still paying for their AOL dial-up.
Oh, don't do that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
There are still things that you can't get through streaming. It's just that I haven't been watching them.
You know... We're supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data, storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Trox. We have Ben Jaffe and Miles Elam in the house with me. We're chatting about lots of things. If you'd like to join the conversation, Rick's into the room. He'd love to take your call. You can call us about Star Trek, about 40 degree angles, and about whale vomit if you'd like. The phone numbers, comets, and that's what we've been talking about. Right?
Yeah, I guess it's true. It's just weird to have it summed up. You know?
Like, it's amazing. We are looking for a title of the show, so if you have a good title for the show, we'd love to hear that. The phone number to call us with questions, comments about technology, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And I'll give out that phone number again in just a second. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Mount Madonna School, focusing on academics balanced with arts, athletics, and hands-on environmental learning for preschool through grade 12. Hosting a campus tour Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. Information at MountMadonnaSchool.org. Again, that's MountMadonnaSchool.org. Mr. Jaffe, I believe that you have a geek bit this week.
I do have a geek bit. It's a visual geek bit, so go to our website and click on the link that I'll post in about half an hour after the show. So this guy downloaded a bunch of the raw photos from the Cassini and the Voyager missions. Yeah. Actually, he did the Cassini mission, but they're also available for the Voyager missions. And in some cases, there are so many photos taken right after the one after the other, you can actually combine them to make a video. So this guy put together a lot of these image sequences and created a really fantastic almost two-minute video. It's actually video of these probes flying around the solar system, specifically Saturn, and taking a look at the moons and the rings, and it's absolutely incredible. It's unlike anything I've ever
seen.
And
when you say one right after another, we're not talking SLR here. We're talking days or weeks in between, but there's just the expanses of space are so large that
it only takes 2 minutes rather than 30 years.
Right.
Exactly.
Thank you. So geekspeak.org for that. Miles, do you have another reason to go up to geekspeak.org? Another geek bit?
Yes. I want to do a correction. I was speaking about Raspberry Pi
last week.
Yeah,
I love Raspberry Pi.
And
small microcomputer.
Two notes. One, it can do high definition video output.
Yay.
And two, I did find a use for it.
Have you bought one yet?
I haven't ordered it.
You didn't give me the URL for that, so I tried to, on the show notes, try to link to how to buy it, and I could only find it in Europe. I could only find it in Great Britain. Couldn't find it locally. But it's soon coming. It's here almost. What are you going to do with it?
This is a
small microcomputer. It's the size of like a deck of cards, and it can do really cool things.
Right. As it turns out, Onkyo, the receiver manufacturer, although there are other ones that do this as well, but they're the ones I've noticed, and it's the easiest protocol. They have network aware ones that you use for streaming Pandora, for example, and the like. But they also have these controls. So over IP, you're able to control these devices. And the network protocol is fairly simple. But I didn't want to make an app for my iPhone. But a web page would be nice. But that meant I need a web server. Not a very powerful one.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at, well, let's see, it's ARM. Oh, wait. And there's Debian Linux is available for ARM, and it can run on this. And I...
Fire up a Node instance. And
Node also runs in there. Node.
So what are the commands you're going to send? What is it going to do once the web app is going
to
do?
You're able to do volume up, volume down, or set to a specific volume, what volume status is, to change what input it is, do controls for zone one and zone two.
So specifically, and you'd want an ARM processor because you want a full JavaScript web browser or web server stack. That's what you want to be able to do because you're a web developer.
It's a very simple
because you could do the same app through in other ways.
I could write a C app that just read from a socket, but I don't want it.
I get it. Cool. And then
plus I can do this because the new iOS supports web sockets.
Yeah.
It means I can have just a constant socket open and don't have to do constant polling. You can have an interactive remote control that just works at the moment and have, for example, my partner and I both have iPhones. We could both look at the same thing and be able to control it and not, you know.
We could fight each other over volume is what you're saying.
We could fight over volume, but we'd also not have it be like, oh, one controlled it and now the other one's out of sync.
Miles. To me, it sounds like you need to make a Kickstarter campaign all around this app. Because if you could provide everyone in the house gets their own remote control, you don't have to fight over the remote control. You get that standard, married problem just disappears.
Well, no, it just means multiple people have remote controls, and so you don't have to fight over the remote control. You just have to go like.
I don't know though. This has been the holy grail for a long time. How many all-in-one remote controls and Palm Pilot remote controls and like. Remote controls for all these devices. What if you could provide the remote control?
I've got one more pick. We're actually going to be talking next week from someone in Santa Cruz who's got a successful, wonderfully successful Kickstarter project. And that's next week's episode of Geek Speak was all about that. But first, let's go on to invite people to call. And again, the phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Geeks Beyond KOSP is supported by Cabrillo Sustainability Council, hosting Earth Week, April 16th through 20th. Each day explores a different sustainability theme and features Cabrillo faculty or guest presenters, food, exhibits, talks, and more. Details are at sustainablecabrillo.org. Again, that's sustainablecabrillo.org. The phone number to ask us anything you'd like. There's no one waiting, which means we either have a problem or you don't want to call us, or I was right, and we're just too pedantic to be listened to. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Luckily, we've got more Nick.
Too pedantic to be listened to, except by the one person who corrected us.
Yes. We love it.
That's brilliant.
I think we last covered your quick story, Miles, about, what was it? I remember. I'm not even doing my job.
Raspberry Pi
correction. Oh, that's right. Well, what you have a news item as well?
No, that was my news item was about my own personal pet project.
Okay.
Well, and for the future reference, if anyone out there is going to get one of these Raspberry Pis or something similar,
small computer,
they are a charity organization, so it's not a for-profit company.
Oh, that's cool.
It's primarily for education. That was their goal and purpose, was to have people play around with it. So whenever we have people call up saying, how do I get into this? How do I play around with something? This is a very cheap way to get into that market. It also has a composite out so you can connect it to a standard TV if you don't have HDMI. And if you have any project, if you come across something, you're like, hey, I want to do this type of thing, let us know. We'll share that project and let's make this a whole collaborative effect so people can see what different ideas people can come up with.
Ben, dual focus contacts?
Yes, indeed. So we've been talking about augmented reality for years and years and years, right? Being able to focus on things and have some kind of like heads-up display pop up in your field of vision that points to something or identifies something or gives you information. So there's a company called Innovega that has developed these contact lenses which allow you to see the world around you, but they also allow you to see this heads-up display right there in your field of vision. And one of the things that's different about this is that you don't actually have to focus on the heads-up display that they put in front of your vision. You're automatically focusing on it. So whatever you focus on, it'll be in focus. I have no idea how they're actually doing this technically. They don't give a lot of details in their news stories. But apparently it's compelling enough that the Pentagon has actually put in an order for a couple prototype contact lenses. Another thing that these contact lenses do is they give the user a much wider field of view. So they allow you to focus on a wider area in focus, as far as I understand it, than you normally are capable of. So a couple of different uses. One, of course, would be the heads-up display. Another one would be to use this kind of technology to allow you to watch 3D movies, but instead of having glasses, these big heavy glasses, you could just put in contact lenses. And you want to make sure you get the right contact lens into the right eye, because Just imagine.
The stereo would be backwards.
Yeah.
And you have to turn those contacts in at the end of the film, and like somebody else wears them later.
Gross. I see those contacts. Give them back. So again, like the technology is very advanced, and they don't give a lot of technical details, but apparently it's compelling enough that the Pentagon has ordered prototypes. However, a lot of eye experts have suggested that this could be problematic, lead to things like motion sickness or whatever, especially if you have a wider field of view. It's kind of like wearing a magnifying glass over both eyes constantly.
You know, everything's in focus all the time.
Yeah, our whole lives we grow up and we know exactly how far away things are because we've calibrated ourselves to our visual field and exactly the specifications of our visual field. So if suddenly you put in these contact lenses and then you're walking around not feeling any different except you're seeing everything differently, that could definitely, I think, contribute to motion sickness. I think there's a psychological effect to wearing something heavy like glasses that indicate to your brain that something's going on.
Well, also, glasses don't actively refocus everything for you.
That's true.
So it's a little different as well.
That is true.
I don't see why they couldn't.
You would be able to, well, because as your eye moves back and forth, it would go through different fields of the lens. It wouldn't work. You have to hold your head perfectly still, your eyes perfectly still in front of you. With the contact being right there,
not
it's kind of weird.
If you have a tracking thing, then you can just shoot where the image
you could
is
move
going to be,
you could modulate the lens differently all along as it tracked it. But with these things, you don't actually need to do that. I guess.
I
definitely like to try them out. I love the idea of getting motion sickness from that.
That sounds great. Yeah. One other really interesting thing about these, though, is glasses stay static relative to your face.
Yes.
Right. Contact lenses move with your eye, so it's a little bit of a different effect. When you move your eye,
you just said that.
Oh, is that what you said? Oh, no, you were talking about refocusing, right?
Well, in the sense
that we were talking about moving.
Yeah,
with
but
the
go,
eye.
But
okay,
go on.
Sorry,
but you're saying
I missed that part.
Moves with your eye.
So yeah, I mean that could also lead to enhanced motion sickness or whatever.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But in talking, I have a friend who does research on the eye, and in talking with her, she was saying, you know, like our vision is actually really, really horrible. It's like worse than a webcam in 1995.
Right.
If you look at the actual number of pixels, even though we have this perception, we have perfect vision, we actually don't. That's mostly our brain changing what we're perceiving instead of what the data that's actually.
And if you don't believe that, take a look at some optical illusions.
Absolutely. Optical illusions, and also try and focus on something without moving your eye that's in your peripheral.
From Gilroy, Carlos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
I was just wondering if you guys knew of anybody, of any company working on a way of making a printer that's non-Bluetooth, Bluetooth, so I don't have to have my wire stretched across my room.
So you have a printer right now that is not a wireless or Bluetooth printer, and you want to print to it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a really, really, really nice printer?
It is.
What is it?
What is the brand? It is. Oh my goodness! I'm not at my desk.
It's okay. It's a Stable.
That's fine. I mean, they're really, really cheap.
Well, new printers?
No, the Wi-Fi adapters for them.
This is a big commercial.
Good
printer. I print a lot.
Yeah. Well, there are network adapter devices that you can add and then make it available on the network, and you can print to it, and that should work. It depends on the driver that you have for your operating system that will recognize that printer if it can support a network version printer. So that would be one problem. The other thing you could do is you could buy a small computer and act that as a print server. But yes, these things exist. Now, you're not actually the question of whether it should just be added as a wireless device or if it should be added to your network and then you can print to it wirelessly. Because if you give it access to your Ethernet network, your physical network by running a cable to it to your network hub, and then your printer connects to that network, I mean your computer print connects to that wirelessly, you can print to it without connecting a wire to the printer. But the printer always is connected to the wires. Do you follow that?
You know what? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I know that I can do that. I do have a laptop that I do my work with, but I also have a computer sitting next to the printer that I've never hooked up to that.
Well, that would be an easy way to do it. Yeah, that's a pretty simple way to do it. So do add it to the computer and then turn on the computer's print sharing for that printer, and you should be good to go as long as it's the same network. That would be the cheapest way to do it.
Perfect. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks so much, Carlos.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye. If you'd like to ask us a question or have a comment about what we've been talking about, please do call in. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. 5877.
It's also a possibility to jump on something like Craigslist or eBay and look for wireless print servers. They're also available if you don't want to buy them new. If you do buy them new, they're less than $100.
Yeah. A suggestion from Aptos, from Elizabeth, for the title of the show, Ejecta from Whales and Stars. That's really good.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
So, yeah. We always, at the end of every show, we sit around
Star
trying to
and Whale Vomit.
No, star whale and whale vomit. And you really want to get vomit in the title, don't you?
And barf.
Do you want to use barf?
Yeah.
Do you want to use barf, whale, and star vomit? So you have both of them in there?
Well, also, I've redundant to the end.
Yes.
Barf, whale,
no,
and star
no,
vomit.
We should probably take the
You can save us
suggestion.
By calling now. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Yeah. As we wait for calls.
Ejected does sound more formal. More.
Ejected does sound good, yeah.
We actually also got an email from Lawrence saying a couple things. One, oh my God, the geekiness meter has exploded today.
Sweet.
And yeah, they're absolutely right. They also said that the Enterprise couldn't be parked by itself. The Enterprise in Vegas, that they would have to design something to support the saucer section.
You said that, yeah.
Yeah, they designed a dry dock thing. And part of it is that Las Vegas has such high winds sometimes that, you know, you have a gigantic sail waiting to blow away. So.
It's a spaceship. It's not an Earth ship. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I don't know. It's not, the thing about Elizabeth's suggestion of ejecta from whales and stars is that it's not really ejecta from stars we're talking about. It's ejecta from planets, exoplanets that we'd be interested in, right? So it's,
you could infer from
the stars. See, we do this afterwards because we don't want to air
they're
this.
They're made from the
stardust.
Material.
Yeah, it's true. As are we all.
Yes.
1-800-655-5877. Ben, you've gotten more news stories. I don't know if...
I do. I have a couple mentions. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have done some more analysis on some of the input we're getting from the universe, and we've discovered that we actually now have a more precise measurement of the age of the universe, 13.5 billion years old. Something that actually...
Down from 13.75, yes?
I thought it was 13.3, but I'm really bad at remembering numbers, so I can't remember.
A couple hundred million here or there.
Yeah, whatever. It kind of blows my mind that although we're constantly refining our measurements of these things, they've always been what they are. Mm. We're just discovering what they are. So the age in the universe hasn't changed or anything like that. It's just really interesting to think about how we're refining our knowledge and decreasing our ignorance step by step. It's very interesting.
It's kind of like how your parents get cooler the older you get, more cooler and more competent the older you get.
Retroactively.
Yeah, they haven't really changed, but our sense of them has changed.
Absolutely.
Has matured.
Absolutely.
From Monterey, Jessica, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
What's your question today? You're on air.
I just wanted to call because I've never heard the guys that are talking on the show, and I thought they were really funny and they're smart. And
I think this is the best call we've ever gotten. Why don't you call every week?
It ought to be because I paid her.
Yeah, who's paying this woman? So,
a little bit more information of who you guys are, what's your background, what's the station about?
Oh, you want us to talk about ourselves? We can do that.
I'm a new listener to your show, and I thought you guys were funny, and I kind of want to tell my boyfriend about it tonight, but I didn't need to know who you guys are.
Okay, so first off, you can find all about us at geekspeak.org. There's a little profile page about us, but we'll do a little introduction to ourselves in a second. And geekspeak.org has shows from, I think, going back to the 2002. Miles and I have been doing the show together since 2000. Ben, you joined us when?
I think
when
it
you
was...
were 18, right? So last month, or
so because you're new,
what,
they always
been doing
make
like
jokes
5 years?
About my youth, right?
And the fact that he's super young.
Four, I think.
4 years, okay.
Three and a half or four, I think.
And so every week we volunteer our time to come down to the station, and about 5 minutes before the show starts, we come in the room real quick and look for the news. And then
think he's exaggerating.
Miles and Ben actually normally have some stories already up their sleeve about the stuff that we're interested in technology, and we're trying to. Share technology with people so that it's not as scary and it's more fun. Because a big part of what happens, I think, to people is that there's so much unknown in tech that you get overwhelmed with it. And it becomes this alien thing you don't know anything about. Kind of like how people get overwhelmed with in math in high school and they say, I'm not good at math. That same type of feeling occurs sometimes with technology. So we're trying to break that barrier down a little bit and say, hey, technology is fun. Science is a great thing. and here's some neat things to talk about. So that's kind of why we do the show. Ben, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Well, my name is Ben Jaffe, and I did theater tech for a while, actually. That's where I met Lyle at UC Santa Cruz. And now I'm doing web development, a lot of front-end web development, and I play music, and I do some animation and video editing stuff, and media, audio, and the radio show.
You're very proficient in music. You can play pretty much any instrument. You're
almost. Not the horns.
Right.
Can't do the thing, buzzing the lips. Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, I also teach web development and video stuff.
Okay, Miles?
I am
Miles Elam.
I am a long-term programmer. I've been doing web development since 95, been programming for much of that time as well. And I have a degree in modern literature.
Hence the pedantics, right?
And you're very into politics, especially in technology politics, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, some people refer to it as being into politics. I prefer it as just watching what's going on.
Pay attention to the world.
Yeah.
You also do a little bit of gardening. Your father. What else? What's your shoe size?
It's a 10 and a half.
I grew up here at the station. My father used to manage the radio station. I used to jump in here and sit in the back corner of this room while my father was on air with a program about arts called
Studio
Arts.
Yeah, a room that incidentally is full floor to ceiling with CDs and
there's no
records.
Vinyl in this room.
Oh, there is no vinyl?
No,
there's a couple.
There's a stack of 15 vinyl there.
There used to be a lot, right?
I have a degree in electronics. I work at UCSC in a digital arts new media program focusing on supporting high-tech art creation. May 4th, we're doing our opening up at UCSC. So if you want to meet me in the flesh, you can come to UCSC on May 4th in the evening to the Digital Arts Research Center and see a whole bunch of really cool art technology mix. That's my day job. I'm a father. I have a lot of chickens at home, not as pets, but as egg producers. I do a lot of woodworking with chainsaw and making furniture.
In fact, a chainsaw broke his back.
Well, I jumped out of the tree is really what broke my back. But I have a chainsaw in my
hand.
Wait,
you jumped out of the tree? I thought the tree knocked you out.
I realized it was scary, and I said I would jump. And that's the tree then hit me. So I had kind of a mid-air collision.
So it's kind of like tossing a ball up in the air and having the bat just go
exactly.
Whack.
And I knocked the bat down. So it was really, I mean, you couldn't do that if you tried. I dare you.
But do you still have pictures of that ladder you were on?
Yes, it's destroyed beyond belief. I think it's actually up on geekspeak.org somewhere. But what else? That's it. We've been doing the show for years, and I love talking about technology and interviewing people. And I'm a photographer. Is that good?
Yeah.
Jessica, do you know who we are now?
Yeah, I have a really good idea now. That's what I imagine you guys did.
And if folks want to play some disc golf, I'd totally be down to, like, or when I'm not working or...
Being a father.
Oh, wait, that's no time at all.
Well, thank you, Jessica, for the call. I hope that you stay with us for years.
I hope so, too. Thank you. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, I never knew who you guys were until just now.
From my hometown and where I live right now, Sarah, welcome from Ben Lomond.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to hear that you're a bunch of well-rounded geeks. You've got a lot of other interests in your life.
We try.
Most geeks do, I find, actually.
Yeah. You know, the thing about a geek is that if you say, hey, are you interested? They go, yeah. It's like a kind of a continual quest for knowledge and not being scared of being wrong because it's an opportunity for learning.
Yeah, we have to be geeks with regard to computers, and that's the most common term for it. But there are also bio geeks. And
all of us have a little bit more going on. Like, I'm really into comics, you know? I mean, not from reading, but from creating.
Yeah, that's pretty geeky.
Yeah, it's pretty geeky.
Well, actually, that goes more into dork.
And all of us have theater background, right? We all have theater background.
We all
been on stage.
Wow. And, yeah.
Have you been on stage, Ben?
Only once. It was an intro to acting class.
And Miles used to do Rocky Horror as Frankenfurter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also did theater in high school and through college.
Yeah. And also, Miles used to be, we won't give that too much information. Sarah, what's your question?
Well, I'll start with what led me to my problem, which was that I downloaded the free Spotify app on my computer at work, and I had a bunch of music all loaded up, and I signed up for the premium version so that I could get it onto my iPhone so I could listen to the music in my car as I was driving home without having to be online or, you know, use 3G. Mm-hmm. So I then canceled the premium service before I had to pay for it, and I still had all the music still on my phone until I accidentally closed the app, and when I tried to reopen it, it was all gone. But it's all still there on my computer at work in my Spotify folder, which is I'm not, you know, paying anything for.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to try to get it back on my phone. So I thought if I copied those songs into my iTunes, like, podcast list or, you know, music list,
mm-hmm.
that I could then load them onto my phone. And I tried to open my iTunes account on my computer at work. I signed in with my,
iTunes information, sure.
Yeah, my iTunes, I had, you know, my password and everything. I thought I had my iTunes account open. I had a few songs. I, you know, was testing it out. So I put a few songs in there. And then I synced my iPhone because it made me do
it. Sure, and it would have probably removed
way.
It removed everything that was on your home computer. We're unfortunately, we're running out of time, so can you go ahead.
So is there any other way to get music from your iTunes account besides thinking that you can't. I mean,
so, okay, let me run through a couple things. First off, Spotify is very specifically doesn't really want you to own that music, right? It's kind of a contractual lease thing. So I don't know if those things are actually MP3s. If you can get them into iTunes, then what you can do is you can put all this on some kind of portable media, a CD of some kind or a thumb drive, a USB drive, take it back to your home computer, add it to iTunes, and then you'll be able to sync it. Assuming you can play it in iTunes, you should be able to play it on your iPod device. So that's probably the way you're going to have to go with it. And I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. I'm sorry.
Well, it's an iPhone. Is that? I mean, I can't find a way to even, like, drag it onto.
That's right.
My
no,
iPhone.
They don't let you do that. You can jailbreak your phone, and that's legal in the United States to jailbreak your phone, which means to break out of that sandbox, that space that Apple puts you in. But it is a bit of hacking that you've got to do.
So the short answer is no. The long answer is yes, if you want to be geeky enough.
Yeah, if you want to be geeky enough, you can do it. But using iTunes is kind of the way you use the iPhone, unfortunately. Thank you, Sarah, for the call. We didn't get the call from Robert in Watsonville. Has a new MacBook Pro, wants to change the text in the menu bar. You do that through System Preferences, and there's like a little blue human, I think it's, what is that little preference for?
Universal Access.
Universal Access. Go in there, and you can change your font size in the OS X. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Cruz.io Works, rentable workspaces located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz, featuring 40 new private offices, meeting rooms, an organic cafe, and 100 megabits per second Wi-Fi. More information is at cruzio.com/cruzioworks or at 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. In the air with me, Miles and Ben, thank you so much for being here. My name is Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence. Rick, thank you so much for coming back and being answering the phones. It was great to take everyone's calls. You can learn more at geekspeak.org.